Welcome to Australia's Fiercely Independent Property Podcast.
Residential property is the only asset class we live in. It is where we raise our families, and it's our most expensive investment, yet property advice remains unregulated.
Listen to three pioneers of the property industry, each with diverse areas of expertise in property planning, buying, and education.
We'll distill the raw truth from the ill-informed.
Join the property planner, David Johnston, the property buyer, Kate Bakos.
That's me.
And the property professor, Peter Kalizos, as we take you on a journey through the maze of property, mortgage and money decisions to empower you to create your ideal lifestyle.
Welcome, everyone, to the Property Planner, Buyer and Professor podcast. It's lovely to have you back again. And I know many of you are excited for this particular episode because it's that time of the month where we have a property market update. Shout out to one of my past students who caught up with me a couple of weeks ago, and he says he loves the podcast, but in particular the property market updates. So EK, this is especially for you. Now, before we get into our market updates and let you know what's happening, let's have a quick chat to two wonderful co-hosts, Dave Johnston and Kate Bakos. Dave, how are you going?
Going really well, Pete. It's my eldest birthday today, so it's a big day, and it's the first day of the Ashes as well.
We can't talk about sport, remember?
50 seconds in, epic fail. Right. Moving on to Kate.
G'day, Kate. How are you?
Oh, just a quick little happy birthday to Luke. He's a beautiful child. I hope he has a great day, Dave.
Thank you.
I'm good. I love that you gave a shout out to EK Pete, because I've been enjoying people reaching out. I've met some really beautiful listeners, and we've got some really encouraging emails. We've had some really good constructive feedback as well, and we've still got a couple of shows in planning to share with everyone in the new year that have been direct responses to some great listener topics. And I want to give a shout out to everyone who has reached out and stayed in touch, and also JT, I'm glad you enjoyed the contrarian episode. He caught that last night and sent me a late text. So happy days.
Excellent. Kate, just before we started recording, you were saying that you are flat out this week. You're doing some crazy hours, Kate.
Yeah, I'd like to say flat out like a lizard drinking, but I'm not doing that.
Well, you just have.
Oh, I'm just so busy. And it's a great busy, but as any advisor who's helping people make critical conditions will say, you don't want the pace to be so frenetic that you're worried that you're missing any details. And so the way that we mitigate that is, you know, we don't carry too many clients, or we don't get a lot of sleep. And I've had to put both of those measures into place to make sure that I'm performing at my best. But as an example, I was negotiating until after 1 o'clock last night, and then on a completely separate negotiation, I got a text just before seven saying, really early text, sorry to hassle you, when you wake up, give us a call. And that's what this season feels like. And the reason for that frenetic behaviour is just there is a lot of stock, there's a lot of motivation. And when you combine FOMO, market confidence, bit of panic, a Christmas deadline and a lot of stock, you see a lot of decisions being made and altered. So people pivot. For example, an agent might think that they've got four buyers on a property that's going to auction in 2 days. And when they do their final callbacks on a Thursday or even a Friday, just to make sure everyone's still sitting where they want them to sit, they might be told that, oh yeah, we've bought something else, or we managed to, you know, do this and retain our property, whatever. People are making decisions at the last minute, and it's throwing a lot of campaigns into chaos. So that we're right in the, you know, the heart of the hurricane right now, the eye of the cyclone.
Right.
100%. We know the numbers and the listings have been off the charts for November, but people are really trying to get properties bought and sold, aren't they, prior to Christmas. And the numbers have reflected that, which we'll get into. But anecdotally, yesterday at one of the kids' Christmas plays yesterday morning, I was chatting to the owner of a Eastern Suburbs real estate agency, and he was saying, look, he's trying to finish up, you know, a week or even earlier prior to Christmas and take some time off, but he just can't get time off. People keep coming with wanting to list properties and put them on the market and get them sold prior to Christmas. And
it's true.
You know, even right up to a couple of days prior to Christmas. So people want to put a line in the sand in 2021, whether they're on the buyer or seller's side.
Yeah, I totally concur. We had our staff party on the weekend, and I took my team away to a beautiful little winery kind of location, and we stayed at a cool hotel, beautiful food, two of us had the laptops and we had two negotiations rolling. And then the next morning I had to race back to Yarraville and complete, you know, all of the due diligence and assessment and inspection and everything on a property that was being sold that day. It's unrelenting. And for buyers out there, I'm not complaining at all, by the way. I'm enjoying every bit of it, feeling a bit tired, but, you know, that's December. I think for buyers out there, they need to take heed that the buying conditions right now are the best they've been all year.
And I think we've said that before too. I'm pretty sure we've said it the last couple of years that often there's really good buying opportunities in December.
Yeah.
Certainly. Mid-December to mid-January, I think, is a very good time to be out there having a look. All right. Now, I know generally the host doesn't say much in our podcast, but I want to start off. The ABS House Price Index came out recently, and I just did some very quick analysis. And I just want to illustrate how important the property cycle is, number one, and number two, property prices do fall. So from September 2017 to September 2020, nationally, property prices dropped by 1%. So in that three-year period, all property prices could do nationally was actually drop by 1%. But September 20 to September 21, they've gone up over 25%. So, you know, the property cycle is a very key component of the property market. And, I mean, I still haven't been able to work out how to predict it, in particular how good it's going to be or how bad it's going to be. You know, a stark reminder is early last year when COVID hit, you know, we had some major players saying, oh, there was going to be a collapse of property prices of 15%, 20%. Even I said they were going to drop, but I only said they were going to drop by 5%. Well, we were all wrong because it's gone exactly the other way. Two things to take away from that. Number one, property prices do drop, but generally the drop is nowhere as big as the increase. And the property cycle is also very important if timing is a component of your buying strategy.
I do love that, Pete. And I think we can't always predict. In fact, even those that are at the coalface can't predict. And right now, I'd say the market's very, very flaky because we've got a lot of forces. If we basically break it down to supply and demand, of course, the conditions are favouring vendors less than they have been. I'm not suggesting it's not still a seller's market, but it's not as aggressive. Now, I heard that the Westpac Consumer Confidence Index rose in November 2021. And what we also know is people are spending. They're spending at the shops. We're getting excited about Christmas. It's looking like a bit of a corker expenditure year. And for people that were forced to save because they couldn't go out and spend their money on food and entertainment, it's been an enormous cash injection for their savings balance. So I anticipate that, you know, consumer confidence and spending out there, if that continues to roll out, and if listings decline, so if listing numbers in the new year are lower than what they've been in this crazy little 2021 patch of, you know, spring summer market, then we might see conditions get tougher for buyers and we might see prices roll on again. So we can't take anything for granted and we've got to keep an eye on the indicators.
We certainly do.
Yeah. And if we just catching on to that point of the household savings, they've gone up again by 19.8%. So that's as high as they've ever been once more, and that's off the back of people saving during the Melbourne and Sydney extended lockdowns. And I think we're up between business and personal, we're back up to around like $350 billion of pent-up savings, which can have a huge impact on obviously spending, which also is part of why they think inflation may be transitory, because that's been a phenomenon around the world. And when you spend all that money coming out of those periods, it will push up inflation for a period of time, but then people will start, obviously they won't have as much in the coffers to spend anymore and they'll start tightening their belts once again. So it's something we've talked about, isn't it, over the period?
Yeah.
And it's built up again because there was extended lockdowns once more.
And we've all been watching our property values grow, and we cannot underestimate the power of the wealth effect. Mm. So even if you had a little bit of war chest savings, if your house is worth $200,000 more, you might be happy to delve into the war chest. And I'm not saying that's a good idea, but that psychological translation, it's a very powerful one.
Yeah, so especially if you're an investor and you have multiple properties, you know, you'd certainly be walking with a spring in your step. Dave, just going back to your point, I agree 100%. And the other thing that's impacting on inflation, which will be, I reckon, relatively short term, is the supply chain constraints. You know, one of the reasons that cars are so expensive is because there's not making as many of them. One of the reasons that new houses are so expensive is because builders can't get the concrete, the timber, the steel to build them, so price goes up. But this is only going to be relatively temporary, as will be the huge savings. And I think we will get back to normality so far as many things are concerned, but in particular in this case, we're talking about inflation.
Just a quick reminder, you can access our show notes, including links to all of the resources we talk about on our website, which is propertyplannerbuyerandprofessor.com.au.
All right, let's get into the property specific update. So Dave, let's kick off with you. CoreLogic has come out with their property prices. What can you tell us?
Yeah, so it's certainly the market showing signs of softening further is the high level story. So household values increased 1.3% over the last month. So that continues their steady decline from the peak in March. What's interesting is basically every capital city is down to 1.1% growth or less, except for Brisbane and Adelaide. So we saw those signs, which I mentioned in the last month's market update, that it looked like Brisbane and Adelaide were holding strong, and potentially East Coast money, particularly Melbourne and Sydney money, was moving into Brisbane and Adelaide and seeing value there. And that's reflected again with really strong growth in Brisbane and Adelaide over the last month. In terms of, I touched on the potential that it looked like, although Hobart was still very strong, it had started to show decline over a couple of months, and that's reflected even further this month. So it, finally, maybe the wind is going out of Hobart sales, perhaps, but I won't call it just yet, because it surprised me often in the last 2 or 3 years. So, but its growth's down at 1.1%. Darwin's moved into negative territory. Melbourne and Perth are lagging. Perth only had small growth of 0.2%. And you know, I do think the inability for people to get over there, inspect property, or send someone over there to inspect property on their behalf.
I reckon their advocates would be very, very busy right now.
Yeah.
I'm getting a lot of requests. Do you know anyone in WA? So Damien at Momentum Wealth, I hope your team are enjoying our referrals.
Certainly, I reckon Hobart's been the darling of the decade. And I'm not talking about the decade that we just started. I'm talking about, you know, 2010 to 2020. It's just phenomenal. And I think we spoke about it, might have been last week's episode. It's not like the people in Hobart have suddenly become richer and they can afford to spend more money. It's the people from the mainland, the richer people from the mainland, who are buying either lifestyle properties or are buying retirement or semi-retirement places, or just buying investment properties. Generally, the more money you have, the more money you can spend on things, including property.
We can't underestimate the climate change refugee kind of thinking patterns, because Tasmania represents, you know, it's the Apple Isle and it is beautiful. And for anyone who's concerned about rising sea levels and about temperature, Tassie's got to be something that, you know, is in their gun sights. So I think
certainly
we'll see a lot of that. I think Tasmania attracts a lot of, obviously, tourism. It's a highly entrepreneurial state at the moment, particularly in the larger cities down there. And as we can work from home, I'm not ready to say that Tassie's had its run. I actually think it's going to continue to surprise a lot of people.
I agree. I think it will continue. Yeah. Okay, for those reasons that you mentioned.
Define the continue. What does continue mean?
I think new wealth down there, Dave. I think the more money that lands down there, the bigger the attractions get that attract people to visit it and spend more money. It's a bit of a cycle.
I think, I know we're going to do a 2022 forecast later on, but I reckon Hobart will be one of the best performing capital cities in 2022. What I'll do is I'll do some analysis to see how Hobart has performed over time. But just having a quick look at the latest ABS stats, I reckon this series started in 2002, so it's almost 20 years ago. I reckon in the last 20 years, we are going to find that Hobart has been the best performing capital city.
I love it.
And I'm doing those numbers in my head, but I'll work it out accurately and I'll report back.
Can't wait. Now, yeah. Is there any chance we can have a little bit of a look at what's happening in Launceston as well?
Yeah, I like Launceston. It's a beautiful little city. I'm pretty sure it started. It's been moving, and but it took a while to follow Hobart's suit. But it has started to, and I'd say there's still opportunity in Launceston. It's a location we talk to our clients about.
So we've talked about property prices, Dave. What about property rents?
Rents continue to grow. Yeah, so they're actually not showing signs of slowing down, but capital growth is still overall outpacing yield. So the yield's reducing, but the rate of growth of rent, oddly, is growing at a faster rate. So
we've got a couple of cities there though, Dave, and I've reflected on this. Sorry to butt in on you. Darwin and Hobart for housing, they're still rocketing along with double-digit rental growth, but the pace of the growth has slowed. So Darwin came off a peak of around 22%. It's back down to just shy of 18. Hobart has come off a little bit, and Brisbane looks like it's stabilised, and that's for houses. When we look at units, the same again. We've got Darwin, Hobart, Perth. The rate of growth has come off a little bit. And what that says to me when we look at the capital growth data is I'm betting – and it's never a safe bet, but my bet here is that investors have flocked to these products. So we've seen a quick uptake in investor activity, and it's put more stock onto the market and it's eased the rental yield.
Yeah, I agree. And I think that sort of played out too. There's some stat I recall with Brisbane, and investor numbers have grown at the greatest rate in Brisbane, which is obviously reflected in their capital growth. Brisbane, you get obviously a better yield than Melbourne and Sydney, which attracts investors, similarly to Adelaide.
If we look at Darwin and a little bit Perth on both of these charts, back to November 16, they look like roller coasters. They're at the depths of terrible returns, negative movement, and right to the highs. That's such a volatile performance. What struck me with the rents, and I was really excited to see it actually, is Melbourne's rebound in the unit market. We've watched Melbourne go from negative 13 all the way now to positive 1.7 for units. And when you think about the sheer number of crappy one-bedders in the centre of our city and in the Docklands and other overpopulated areas, they're part of this median figure here. It's quite incredible that our units have been able to rebound to that. When landlords, if they're resetting rents now, according to this, it's a median figure, they're applying a tiny rental price growth. And that's incredible to think about where we were a year ago.
It's just a little personal story. So one of my investment properties was recently rented at $620 a week, but the tenant last month was paying $520 a week, same property. Now, that's not to say property rent went up $100 in 1 month, but when the previous tenant signed their lease 13 months ago, market rent was $520. Well, actually, I thought it was $500 because they offered $520. Back then, they offered $20 more. And I think one of the key reasons is the vacancy rate. And if we have a look at the vacancy rates, where generally 2% is considered the norm or the equilibrium, most capital cities around Australia in October had a vacancy rate well below 2%. Most of them had it below 1%, which just goes to show how tight the rental market is, hence one of the reasons why rents are going up so significantly.
Yeah, and in terms of, we've been talking a bit about the unit story, haven't we, in terms of the gap between valuations of houses and units is at record levels. So based on median values, capital city houses are now 37.9% more expensive than units, which is officially the largest difference on record. But the quarterly rate of growth in October was the narrowest it's been between the two different housing types since October last year. So again, you know, if you're looking for a quality unit, now's probably as good a time as any to buy, and we're likely, you know, in terms of historical cyclical nature of markets that it's reasonably probable that if the gap's the biggest it's ever been, that we will start to see that gap narrow closer to long-term trends over the coming, let's say, year or two.
Certainly, as it gets harder to borrow money or you can borrow less, I think what we'll see is people still want to live in a particular area. They can't afford a house, they'll transition down to a townhouse. Can't afford a townhouse, then we'll transition down to a flat or a unit.
And yep, I think as no confidence doubt is restored around continued lockdowns and people start to enjoy the city more, they're willing to, it's even as far as us buying tickets to gigs, the day that we all confidently spend money that's non-refundable on a gig is the day that our city has all of its appeal back.
I was buying.
I agree. You know, again, a little personal note, when we're booking flights, we usually book with Virgin because if you don't go with Virgin, it just goes straight into a travel bank, whereas like Jetstar, for example, have far too many restrictions. And if we're booking on booking.com, we want something that you can cancel if you need to, say 24 hours beforehand. But you're right, when confidence comes back and we don't need to do that, all of those savings that we've been hoarding for the last 18 months or 21 months, yes, they'll be out in the economy.
Yeah, well, I noticed when I was buying the guest passes to the members for the Boxing Day test, and
you're on thin ice.
And it's got auto selected, you know, select the refundable tickets, and it's an extra $20. I go, nah, I'm backing the test. We'll go ahead.
All right, very good, very good.
So I didn't, okay, didn't live in Perth. That otherwise I would have been in trouble.
Yeah, true. So one of the reasons we said rents were going up is because there is a lack of investment properties around, and one reason is due to, say, people like me who are now at their stage of their investment journey where they're cashing out. They don't need to buy anymore, so they're just cashing out, and they're being bought by owner-occupiers, which is fantastic for those owner-occupiers, but then there's less choice for renters. But we got a similar story for people wanting to buy property, haven't we, Dave, so far as listings are concerned?
We've had a record number of listings in November. So over the month, there was over 50,000 listings, which was actually 34% above the same time last year and 15.7% above the five-year average. So anecdotally, we could see it happen. We could feel it happen. You know, there's more media stories about the number of listings out there. You know, I think there's a general sense that perhaps we're getting closer towards the peak, the mythical peak of the market. And so people are going, okay, well, if I'm going to sell, you know, now's probably the time. And we certainly saw the conflation of those different factors, I think, come together in November and perhaps to some degree in December as well.
Now, do you know why I think we haven't peaked? I'm going to go on the record here. If we look at the new listings, as you've just said, Dave, the number's off the charts. In fact, it's 15.7% above the five-year average, but it's significantly above all of the last 5 years. And if we look at total listings, it's horrible. So it's 15.4% below the same time last year and a whopping 24% below the five-year average. So what that says is even though we have enormous volumes, our total listings are being soaked up at a more rapid rate.
There's still a long way to go, isn't there, to catch
up? There's a lot of buyer hunger. So my concern is that if we've condensed all of our spring activity in our major capitals, and Melbourne and Sydney account for a lot of listings, but I'm not forgetting the rest of the nation either, if we've got our typical strong late spring market and it's all being condensed and we're just starting to feel like we've got a fraction of an oversupply, when that all gets soaked up over January, when real estate basically shuts down except for the regions, we will see the stock disappear again. And unless we have really strong stock volumes in February, we will likely find that buyers are feeling the pinch like they've been for the majority of this year.
I agree. I don't think we've peaked. I think market growth next year will be somewhere in that 5 to 10% ballpark across the country.
Yeah, I agree. I think it'll be single digit next year.
Do you know what was fascinating? In that very first monthly data update that you did, Pete, when we walked through each capital city, we didn't touch on the regions. And the regions for the month of November still delivered 2.2. Now, I know there's a lot of regions, so there's a lot of data here, but That's phenomenal. The COVID thing hasn't been the only initiator of setting off the regions, and people have really discovered the regions, but we've also seen affordability in the capital cities forcing people to think creatively about moving to a region. And when you've got money going into a region and you've got infrastructure upgrades and lifestyle things catering to all of these newcomers, it starts to carry more weight and attract more people. And again, the cycle continues. So my prediction is regions won't cool next year.
Yeah, well, interestingly, CoreLogic says that over the last 12 months, combined regions have increased 24% and capital cities just under 21%. So over the last year, regions have done particularly well. Regional Tasmania, which probably includes Launceston, I reckon, it's done 29%. So that's really doing well, as has regional New South Wales. But, again, as lending tightens a little bit and people can't afford maybe to buy in capital cities, some will be looking for the regional areas.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to watch that space over the next 12 months or 3 years, I think, actually.
Now, Kate's already touched on the Westpac Melbourne Institute Consumer Sentiment Time to Buy a Dwelling Index, and I know Dave loves this one, but just, Dave, before I get you into it, time to buy a dwelling is below 100, right?
Yes.
So they reckon it's not a good time. But there would be many reasons for that, wouldn't there? People might think there's a property price crash coming. Or people might, which I think is happening now, is buyer fatigue. You know, I've been to so many auctions, I've missed out so many times. I'm going to wait till next year to buy.
What about parties are on and the pubs are open? We're getting a bit of that. You know, people say,
very true.
I guess it depends when they're doing their survey.
Well, you know, the frustrating thing is I've got dedicated clients that have been so excited about taking heed of the market conditions and putting all of their energy into the property searches. And the last couple of weeks I've had a couple of emails, oh, can we not do any inspections this Saturday? We've got a party on. And I can't begrudge that. But when you count the Saturdays that are remaining and you look at the conditions, you're sort of tearing your hair out. And I almost want to say to them, can I get you to do a bunch of inspections at 9 a.m. or something? Like, what can I do to get you out there and keep you from going to that party too early?
Which is a great anecdote for why every year we talk about December being a good time to buy.
Yeah.
Because there is a percentage of buyers who are doing that every year, and maybe even more this year because we've all been so constrained and unable to get out and about and enjoy our weekends.
Mm, true. Mm.
So Pete, I do love the time to buy dwelling index. and you're right. I think, you know, one of the big ones is just price. You know, people will be answering, I don't think it's a great time because values are so high in terms of their perception. I think, though, it is a forward indicator for, you know, the market changing direction, and I think it has been again this time because that's sort of moved below 100 at some point in probably the last 4 or 5, 6 months, and we've seen that gradual decline in prices since then.
One of the positive stats here is economic conditions in the next 12 months. It's the highest it has been in 2 years and certainly well above the average. The average is 91.1. In November, it was 106.6. So if people remember 100 is equilibrium, which means half of the people think that the economic conditions will be worse in the next 12 months, half will think it'll be better. So if it's above 100, that means more people think that it'll be better than worse. So even though they don't think it's a great time to buy, for whatever reason, they reckon that the economy will be better in 12 months' time, which is very positive because people's perception is their reality.
I want us to track this and pay special attention to it every single month leading into the federal election because it's really...
Yeah, good one, Kate.
Sometimes amusing, but sometimes a bit terrifying, seeing how this particular figure changes as, you know, policy announcements are suggested and people start to get a bit jittery about what sort of change they might be facing.
That's the other big event for property and the economy in the first half of next year is a federal election. So great that Dave's got this info and we can collect it every month because we do a monthly update, obviously. And so we'll just keep tracking that to see if that drops the closer we get to May, which is when the federal election is supposed to be.
Politics is so intriguing already, isn't it?
It is, isn't it? It is, yeah. All right, Dave, lending indicators, our mortgage specialist on the show. What can you tell us about the lending indicators from the ABS?
The trend continues, so investors continuing to become a higher percentage of the overall numbers. So they continue to creep up to 32.9% of all new loan commitments. So that was sort of in the mid to low 20s earlier in the year. We predicted they would come on board once they saw the prices were moving, and they certainly have. So owner-occupiers are down at 67%. Again, I've touched on this each month, so I'll keep it going. When APRA stepped in really strongly in 2015 with the curbs around interest-only loans and other factors, they're at 46%. Historically, the entire Australian property market, currently it's around 66% is owner-occupiers, 34% investors. We're tracking around where the Australian property market sits right now, 32.9% investors, you know, one-third investors, two-third owner-occupiers. What's quite interesting is the amount of finance fell, which can also be a signal that the market's softening. It had been so strong, though, so it's coming off really big highs with all the buying that's been going on. That's a few of the little takeaways from the lending indicators.
And Dave, just a quick one. This doesn't include pre-approvals, does it?
No, this is actual new loans. Yeah. So actually the loans have been taken out.
So if we have a look at the first home buyers, which have decreased a little bit, and we can not necessarily assume that first home buyers are choosing to step out of the market. They might be getting slammed at auction. So I know every broker I've chatted to has a lot of pre-approvals in the system, and they tend to be first home buyers that manage stringing together updated pre-approvals. So the conditions are still pretty tough out there for buyers. Even though we're talking about things easing, it's still a seller's market.
Yeah, it's still a seller's market. It's still competitive, but it's getting closer. It's probably the best conditions it's been since last year.
Yeah, agree.
At the moment. But that, as you touched on earlier, that could change early in the new year. Because
so Dave,
the big run of listings.
Yeah,
Dave, another big picture element is unemployment. What can you tell us there?
So unemployment has risen because of the lockdowns, but we think that's just going to be a short-term factor now that Sydney and Melbourne have opened back up. The unemployment rate nationally is at above 5.2. The government want to get it into the fours before they'll consider, or the RBA in particular, with regards to even looking at any sort of monetary tightening. But we had some negative figures off the back of the Sydney and Melbourne lockdowns, but that's expected. Job ads are up significantly again, so that's expected to start coming down again now that we're back out and about.
Very good. Again, I know you're a big picture man. RBA made an announcement on bonds. What can you tell us there?
So, look, I'm a big picture, and then I like the micro as well, but often I'm talking about the macro here. In terms of bonds, the RBA have announced, well, that they kept rates on hold again, which was to be expected. What's happened with the actual bond yields as they've started to normalise? So once the RBA made their announcements actually last month, they have normalised back down the three-year bond yield, which takes a bit of pressure off the cost of fixed rate loans, which have been rising steadily over the last 1 to 2 months. That is some of the key information from yesterday's meeting. Was there something else there that you were going to touch on?
Just for our listeners, so can they expect, I mean, bonds are obviously very closely related to lending rates. Can they expect for interest rates because interest rates are dependent on what the banks do. Can they expect the RBA to lift the cash rate in 2022? What do you reckon?
They're very confident they won't have to lift the cash rate. The bank bill swap rate also impacts fixed rates and lending, and that has risen by about 100 basis points, which is significant, and that's one of the reasons the fixed rates have been rising. We have had a higher percentage of borrowers take out fixed rates because unusually they actually got so low and lower than the variable rate for an extended period of time. So that's going to have some impact on finance and, you know, less people, essentially people looking to borrow new money. It's more expensive than it has been because the fixed rates are higher So therefore, more people will be taking variable rates again. So yeah, these little things have an impact. So fixed rates getting higher, you can't borrow quite as much. Obviously, property prices getting higher, they are all playing into the market softening.
Yeah, and if I could give myself a little pat on the back, I was able to fix my interest rates just before they went up. So that's about the only time I reckon I've beaten the bank in all the years that I've been
invested. I don't believe you, Pete. You're Greek.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I'm very happy. So I've refinanced numerous loans at a 3-year fixed rate because not because it was the cheapest, but I plan to hold the properties for a very long time. And I didn't think 5-year fixed was a good rate. And I thought 1 year, I mean, 1 year was even lower. 1 year fixed was even lower, but you know, in 12 months' time, I would be refinancing again at a much higher rate. So
yeah,
it's only taken me about 35 years to do that, but finally I did it.
Well done. I still think it's a pretty reasonable time to fix for 3 to 5 years, because you would expect rates will rise at some point in the next 1 to 2 years.
I just think it's
crazy. All those years I've thought, gosh, anything south of 6% is a winning streak. Showing my age.
Yeah. All right, now, boys and girls, we've only got about another 5 minutes to go. So, Kate, is there anything else you wanted to make comment on so far as the big picture stuff was concerned?
I like leaving the economic stuff to Dave. He's all over it.
He's good at that, isn't he?
Yeah. And I won't talk about wages growth or anything like that. What I would love to circle back to, and we talked about total listings just before, but old listings. And this information is available for anyone who wants to read it. It's not a paid report that we get. Old listings are those that are greater than 180 days. And this really intrigued me. Nationally, the yearly change that we've had for super old listings, and this is typically all that low-hanging, overpriced or crappy stock that no one wanted for half a year, we've had a change of over 50%, which means it's all got soaked up. Buyer FOMO will do that. But even with the market conditions that we've been facing in the last month, we've still seen super old stock getting soaked up. And if I can just step through the capital cities, Sydney, just shy of 5%, Melbourne 11%, Brisbane 12%, and I go down to Hobart 17.7%. That's phenomenal as a measure of monthly change. And to think that we've got all of these new listings coming at us, we're still grabbing the old stuff. That's one key reason why I think unless buyer energy is deflated through macroprudential changes or anything relating to credit or even interest rate rises, which I agree with Dave, I don't see on the horizon. I don't think we've got a cash rate change coming. But if I look at the sheer hunger of buyers and how much old stuff they're grabbing, I think that really underpins, strong buyer sentiment into 2022.
Next year is going to be very, very interesting. COVID-19, I think, will still affect the market in some ways, but nowhere near as bad as it has in 2020 and 2021. So we'll be slowly getting back to a more normal market. Dave, anything else you wanted to say?
Well,
not your gold nugget yet. We'll leave the best till last. Anything else?
No, I'll wait for the gold nuggets.
Okay, good on you. All right, so please don't go away, everyone. We've got gold nuggets from Kate and Dave coming up.
If you've enjoyed our podcast, leave a review on iTunes and share the episode with your friends.
Now it's time for us to go mining for our gold nugget property tip of the day.
Dave, what's your gold nugget?
My gold nugget is we've got across the country, we've got a two-direction market. Okay, so Brisbane, Adelaide, and I'll include Perth are moving ahead in terms of price value growth, and the other capital cities have reduced in the last month. So I think that's just a little space to watch. Those middle-sized cities, potentially people are seeing opportunity in them. And the gap between Sydney and Melbourne's median is now $302,000. So Melbourne's 72% of the value of Sydney's median. I'm going to keep watching that number over the next year or two.
Okay, very good. Kate, what's your gold nugget?
My gold nugget for anyone out there trying to purchase property this side of New Year's Eve or Christmas is to stay close to the agent on the campaign. And what I mean by that is don't assume that the price guide that they've got on there or the price expectation that they've cited to you necessarily has to stand, because a lot of vendors are committed to selling. Some of them have bought something and they have to sell, but so many people have that Christmas Day deadline in their head, even if it's just a nominal deadline. And I often talk to agents right throughout the week leading up to an auction, or stay in touch with them when I'm gearing up to make an offer. And circumstances can change. Don't be lowballing things and getting your hopes up about properties that are well outside your reach. But if you think it's marginal, talk to the agent, because you never know if you've got a good firm offer with good terms, but your price isn't perhaps where the vendor wanted it to be. You might get lucky in this last fortnight.
Excellent. Thank you very much, Dave. And thank you very much, Kate, for your gold nuggets. And thank you, listeners, for your time this week. And we look forward to catching up with you again next week. Bye for now.
See you later.
See you next week.
If you've enjoyed this episode and would like to learn more about how to put your best foot forward in this market, take and listen to episodes 9, Why Your Mortgage Strategy is More Important Than Your Interest Rate, episode 12, Property Cycle Management, Why Now is Always the Best Time to Buy if it suits your personal economy and you have a long-term property plan, episode 52, Dissecting 10 Years of CoreLogic Data, Capital Cities and Regional Areas, episode 78, Setting Yourself Up to Purchase with Confidence and Why Getting Your Pre-Approval in Place is More Critical Than Ever, and also episode 94, The Winner's Curse and How to Avoid It.
Thank you for joining the property planner, David Johnston, whose company Property Planning Australia provides the only independent pure planning advisory in Australia that does not buy or sell property, insurance, investment or super product.
And the property buyer, Kate Bakos, recently awarded Buyer's Agent of the Year and an owner of an independent buyer's agency in Melbourne's Inner West. And of course, the property professor, Peter Kalizos, Australia's leading property university lecturer, Chairman of Property Investment Professionals of Australia and seasoned investor and developer.
We've really enjoyed delivering this podcast, and we'd love you to join us on our podcast webpage at propertyplannerbuyerandprofessor.com.au or our Facebook page. Feel free to send us any questions and Dave, Pete and I will answer them for you.
So until next time, remember that each property decision you make is leading you towards your ideal lifestyle.
Everything we talk about in this episode is general in nature and should not be considered to be financial advice. We've put a lot of effort into making sure the information is accurate, but please don't rely on this information to make a decision. If you're looking for specific advice, please seek the help of a specialist, and remember, it's important you determine your trusted advisors are independent.